Welcome to the ID10T podcast number 1059. Let's jump right into the community corkboard and talk about what you are doing in the ID10T community. During this time, Kyle writes, I recently published a book titled To the Edge, Successes and Failures Through Risk-Taking. This book is a memoir of my life where I analyze the various risks that I've taken, the good and the bad that has come from those risks, and what I've learned, and how I've become a better person, husband, father, and educator, all with the goal of inspiring others to take more risks and improve their lives through risk-taking. The book can also be found on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com, and you can learn more about the book at TheEdgeEDU.com. TheEdgeEDU.com. Thank you so much, Kyle. Thank you very much. Now, also within context, I don't think Kyle is talking about go outside during a pandemic and start hugging people or touching things and wiping your face. That is a poorly calculated risk. I think he's thinking more along the lines of like, oh, things that you probably put up mental blocks for. You're like, oh, I don't know if I should do this. No. Put yourself out there. But I don't think he means doing things that are unsafe. So just wanted to clarify. I'm sure Kyle, I don't know Kyle, but I'm sure he would agree. But you can be like Kyle, take a risk and email events@id10t.com if you would like to have your thing mentioned on the ID10T podcast, which is this episode, is Michael Shannon, who's legitimately like one of the best actors of our generation. I don't think anyone would disagree with that. Not only is he an amazing actor, he's super fucking funny. And I think I'm going to post the clip. He was on At Midnight in 2017, I think, with Seth Rogen and Kelly Oxford. And he was so fucking funny. I mean, they all were hilarious. And I think I was going to post a clip on Instagram from At Midnight. I've been posting hashtag games on there. So there you go. Hashtag War with Michael Shannon will be on Instagram.com/Hardwick. And also, he was on the podcast back then too. But really funny and just a really thoughtful guy, like a very deep thought kind of guy. And again, I'm so enjoying these like Zoom chats. As I've said before, so many people I never thought that I would be able to talk to. So many podcasts just slip through my fingers because I'm like, nah, if they're not in LA and they can't come to the podcast studio, then then I think it's not going to work out. But now no one can go to any podcast studio. So I'm really appreciating these Zoom chats, and I will continue to do them probably even after this is all behind us. But Michael Shannon, again, promoting The Quarry, which is on VOD April 17th. The Quarry, April 17th. Here's the ID10T podcast number 1059 with Michael Shannon.
Initiating ID10T protocol.
I haven't seen you in a while.
It has been a while. It's been quite a few years. I mean, it feels like just a few months, but you know, time just flies by.
I think the last time I saw you was at the game show, right?
Yes, which I just coincidentally watched a clip of the other day when I saw that you were coming on. I was like, I haven't seen the At Midnight clip in a while, and it's really fucking funny. Do you remember what you did for the hashtag game? You just retooled Deck the Halls. He was like, deck the balls, dick the halls. Like you did like five versions of that joke, and it got funnier every time.
Oh boy. Yeah, me and my potty mouth.
No, it's, listen, that show was definitely a hard R rating. So it was totally on brand for what that show
good.
Was.
Good. Do you have kids?
We do not have kids yet. It is something that we are going to try to do, but probably wait a little bit now.
Yeah, it's a little more stressful if you have kids to try and get through this particular situation. I don't know how much you're talking about or not talking about this, if you're trying to offer people a respite from the whole situation.
I think we're just talking, you know, what I'm just talking about with people, whatever they're in the mood to talk about. So I yeah. think people who are kind of stuck with their kids now, especially if the kids are particularly young, how are they explaining to kids, like, I know it's hard to understand why we can't leave the house and go to school, but we just have to stay inside now. Is it, it does feel like a whole extra layer of stuff that parents are having to deal with at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm very fortunate. I have two very, I don't want to refer to my own children as intelligent, but goddamn it, it's the truth. And they get it, and they're super, they just have a super healthy attitude about it. I'm very lucky. And I play this jazz radio station that drives them crazy. And they have like news reports from NPR and also from their own news people, like every half hour, and always talking about, you know, the coronavirus and, you know, hot spots and all these things. And they seem pretty undeterred by it. They're not super rattled by it. They don't particularly want to go outside, but
well, that's good.
They don't seem like super scared or anything, and I think they kind of trust us that we know what to do and how to keep them as safe as possible. Yeah.
Well, that probably has a lot to do with whatever you've instilled in them or whatever behavior seeing that you as guys are displaying for them. If you were a particularly anxious person, they would probably absorb that and be anxious kids. But if you're, you know, if you're pretty calm, then that's probably what they've absorbed. That's sort of the foundation of that. That's the thing about parenting that, you know, cause I tend to get anxious about things and I think I've got to get over that, because even if you think you're hiding it, kids are just like these weird empathic sponges. They'll just absorb it. No matter what.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, there's this saying, you get what you can handle, you know, and I there's no way of proving it, but, I feel like I don't know that I can necessarily take a huge amount of credit for the way that my kids are, but, I sure am grateful that they are the way they are. But yeah, it is true. They're extremely perceptive and sensitive. But you know, it's strange. I'm in New York City, but I'm in Brooklyn, and it's a little more spread out. You know, I have a house and a yard, and we're really kind of lucky. I think about people that are alone, that are in apartment buildings that don't have any space, and. I think as far as this particular situation goes, we're pretty fortunate. Yeah.
Well, were your kids, I imagine they were in school before and then now no school for the rest of the year. So did you have to, I'd asked a friend of mine, she said, well, I think the kids might be doing online school like Zoom. And I go, yeah, but they're not going to be on Zoom for 8 hours. And she goes, oh yeah, I don't know if it's going to be a combination of homeschooling and then also like Zoom schooling with the kids. Are they technically done with school or are you still?
No, my older daughter has kind of figured it out for herself. We have an office with a desktop in there, and every morning at 8 a.m. she goes up there and she's got it all worked out with her teachers. You know, they don't keep her on there too long. She gets like a 2 hour lunch break. Because I had the same concern. It's like, I don't want my kids staring at a computer for 8 hours a day. It's not good for their eyes or their brain or whatever. But she's like totally self-sufficient. My younger one's in kindergarten. That's a little trickier because I think kindergarten's by and large a social experience. I mean, you can only spend so much time, you know, counting your numbers or, you know, writing the letter G. I mean, it's you mostly go to kindergarten to spend time with other children, you know, and, but she's finding stuff to do. They're really into, they have this miniature, it's like a greenhouse, construction. It's So they're making all these little tiny like hand gardening tools and pots and flowers. It's some weird German company that makes these like miniatures, houses and greenhouses and things like that. So anyway, they've got their projects that keep them busy. Yeah.
That's cool. I have a lot of hope for Gen Z, which is the generation your kids are in, because I feel like they're going to see, I feel like they're going to grow up with a hopefully a healthier balance of seeing their millennial parents and Gen X parents and grandparents being so obsessed with ourselves and, you know, social media and the craziness of the world and the 24-hour news cycle. And I feel like they're going to, I feel like it could be like a, Gen Z could be like a Summer of Love hippie kid generation, you know, where they're like, yeah, fuck all that shit.
Yeah.
I see my parents go crazy with all that technology shit. I want to get back to nature.
Yeah, I certainly am getting that vibe, at least for my kids. I mean, like I said, we're fortunate to have a yard. Yesterday it was kind of sunny and a little warmer than it's been. And my wife and the girls were in the backyard, like planting flowers and doing yard work quite, you know, blissfully. And my older daughter is very connected to nature and the earth. I mean, she has a class she takes at school that's called sustainability. Literally study sustainability. Jesus Christ, yeah,
that's great.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
Have to have that class because of our generation.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we've added to the.
We fucked that up. So have to have that. You know, the children of the 80s who just grew up like greed is good. Let's waste shit.
Yeah, right. Let's just throw all our Aquanet cans in the garbage and not think about it.
Just dump those in the ocean. It'll be fine. What dolphins eat that? It's fine. You know, like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, that was our generation.
Yeah. Well, have you heard the Marc Maron crack about, at least we brought our own bags to the grocery. We did the best we could.
Yeah.
We brought our own bags.
I know.
Like that was our defense.
And I was actually reading last night that I don't know if it's whichever markets are still open are saying, maybe Whole Foods is, they're now saying like, do not bring your own bags to the markets because they could be contaminated. You could be bringing virus into the, so now it's like the sort of the flipping of, No. I know we said that. Okay, that was good for the environment like a month ago. Now, keep your fucking bags at home until it's good for the environment.
Right. Yeah, I just spent before I got on with you, the last 15 minutes like wiping off knobs with bleach. My fingers still smell like bleach.
Oh, yeah.
And bleach is not something I'm particularly fond of using, but I guess in the current situation it's kind of unavoidable.
And it, you know, the thing is we will get through it. Your kids might, it'll be interesting in 10 years 20 years to see how they look back and think of this time. If it, to them it's like, oh yeah, it was this weird kind of like we just stayed at home for a couple months but it was fine, my parents were cool, we made a game of it. And also I feel like what's going to happen is your kids are going to end up loving jazz when they're older, because my dad used to play this country station when I was growing up and I hated it. And in my whole life, I fucking love like 70s and 80s country music so much.
Right, right.
So they might.
Well, it reminds you of home, doesn't it?
It
what? Feel like you're at home. It reminds you of home.
Yeah, I guess it does. Like on a really deep level, it really does feel like home. Like all those things when you're a kid that you think are dumb, you grow up and you're like, you know, that was actually all right.
Yeah.
Was your band? I was watching videos of your band.
Oh my god!
And it felt like there was a little bit of a country undertone to one of the songs that I saw. You guys were playing live in a rock club somewhere.
Yeah. I have a couple of twangy songs. When I was writing the songs, which I haven't done in a little bit, I wasn't really confining myself to any one particular genre. You know, I was just whatever tune came into my head. And it's funny because my musical taste is like all over the place. I don't have a particular genre of music that I like identify with, but I guess to the extent I'm a big fan of Wilco, like
most, oh, yeah.
you know, white 40 something men with kids. You know, it's maybe that kind of vibe I mean, to me, it's I love old country. The new country music, I don't. It doesn't even sound really like country to me.
Well, it's pop. It's like crossover pop. Like
yeah.
My wife listens to a pop country station on Sirius XM, and I keep saying to her, like, country does not have auto tune. This is not.
No.
She's like, but I love it. I go, it's fine. I'm just saying, this is more pop. Like, you know, country is more. You know. Merle Haggard, George Strait, Waylon, you know, Ray Price, you know, it's just different. It's just different. So I'm already like a cranky old man about country music.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for me, it's like Hank Williams is, incredible music. Cold, Cold Heart. That's probably my favorite country song.
I mean, in a way, those early country stars like Hank Williams, who, you know, obviously had some substance abuse issues, their music was literally, I think, their only acceptable form of therapy. Like, they just, they were the drink-it-off generation, you know? So for people like that, or Patsy Cline or Loretta Lynn, like, people who were really emoting in such powerful ways through their music, because I think they had like no other healthy outlets to get their you know, emotional baggage out.
Well, yeah, it can be said for a lot of artistic expression. I mean, that's certainly why I started messing around with acting. Was my dad pointed out early on, he came to see me in a play and he said, I don't understand. You're basically just, basically just acting like yourself. I said, I know, but in real life, when I act like myself, I get in trouble. But when I'm on stage and I act like myself, everybody claps. So, yeah. Yeah.
Did he that's understand what, it?
That's why we're sitting here now, Chris.
Did he? Because it's not acceptable to be yourself in real life. Did he understand that context?
I guess. I mean, by the end of it, he was very proud of. I mean, this was way at the beginning. This was like the second play I did in Chicago. I was literally 16 years old, and I was playing a teenager who skips school and gets in trouble. I mean, so it wasn't a huge leap at that time. But in the years that followed, when he saw that I could also do a couple other things. Had a couple other tricks up my sleeve. He began to appreciate it more. Yeah, but I changed too. Yeah, I changed too. You know, I've been doing this for 30 years, so it's a long and winding road. Yeah,
those are big numbers. I'm in the like, oh, I remember 30 years ago quite clearly club, and it's jarring to put it into that context, because I think our generation is the like extended adolescence generation, where we didn't really have to grow up, you know, so much, which is probably why you look around and you see that I have like a bunch of animation cells and toys and all sorts of weird shit. And our parents didn't really, that was not their experience. And so I think that was their burden for us, was like, when are you fucking kids going to grow up? As a result, you know, here we are in our well into our 40s, and I don't know. Do you feel like a grown adult, or do you still feel like that kid?
I don't know. That's an interesting question. I don't know if I affix a particular age to how I feel, but I don't feel like I don't feel like an expert or anything. I certainly don't feel like I know all that much about anything. I feel kind of a lot of times like I'm just puttering around.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of times like that, the character Chauncey Gardner that Peter Sellers plays in Being There, you know,
yeah.
I'm just kind of, I'm in the right place at the right time. And, you know, to a certain extent, I must have figured out something along the way, because otherwise people wouldn't keep calling me and asking me to do things. But just in terms of, I look around at other people, and particularly because, you know, I live in New York City, so I'm surrounded by a lot of very competent, hyper professional, you know, people who really are on top of things. And I live in Brooklyn, and I'll look around at like the other Brooklyn parents or whatever, and I just feel like I don't belong at all. You know, I don't function the way that they function. But it's true. It's funny. I don't think of my age very much. It seems so arbitrary. And age is something that has changed over the years. Like, because now you tell somebody that you're 45 and they say, oh, you're still so young. Yeah. There used to be a time in history where when you were 45, you maybe had 5 or 10 years left. You know what
I mean?
And
then you'd have to retire. Yeah.
Yeah. Or, you know, back in the old days, people were lucky if they lived to be 50.
Yeah.
And now it's like you're 45 and you're like, oh, you're still a baby. I'm like, that's confusing, but I guess it's true. I don't know.
Yeah. I had the two most opposite grandfathers anyone could have. My dad's father was a house painter. He retired at 55. And from then on, for the rest of his life, he was in his pajamas every day at 4 p.m., went to the horse track every day. And my mom's father owned a bowling center and like worked every day pretty much until he got sick in his late 70s, played golf 3 times a week. And so I have these two sort of diametrically opposing role model forces in my grandparents, where it does kind of tweak me out when I think about it. Like, yeah, I'm not that far. I'm less than 10 years away from where my pajama grandfather was when he was just like, well, fuck all this. But I think that had a lot to do with the fact that he hated what he did, so he couldn't wait to retire.
Right. Yeah, I think we're fortunate that, well, I mean, obviously the thing with like acting or entertaining is that, you know, as long as you can put a couple of sentences together and, you know, stand up or whatever, you can keep doing it. You see people do it all the way until they, although you do see some people, particularly people I really admire, who get to a certain point and they retire. You know, people like Jack Nicholson or Gene Hackman are just like, no, I just don't want to do that anymore. And I probably, from an outside point of view, it's like, well, why would you want to stop making movies? It must be the greatest thing ever. But there are, I don't know, I can see where they would get to a point where it's just not interested anymore. But by and large, you can do it. The notion of retiring, I mean, I joke about it sometimes, but it seems kind of ridiculous. You can do this as long as, the hardest part is when you start losing your memory. That's really when it gets difficult. Yeah.
Yeah, I would imagine. But also not even just that, but depending on what a person's process is, like, you know, to hear that, I mean, I don't know anything about him personally, but to hear that Daniel Day-Lewis doesn't want to do movies anymore, I totally understand, because he's that sort of like immersive, you know, I got to dig inside the skull of this character and live in it for a long time. It's like, that probably just is draining. And at a certain point, you know, when you're young, you're hungry and you want stuff. And then at a certain point, you kind of, I think people just go, I think I just want to be happy and comfortable.
Right.
And I think it's comfort.
And be myself. Stop trying to pretend that I'm somebody else.
Right.
You know, stop trying to, you know, because that can happen. You can get so caught up in trying to figure out all these characters that you lose sight of who you may actually be yourself. I mean, I know it's, you know, woe is me, champagne problems, but it is something that I think could conceivably happen to somebody.
Yeah, but I also, it's funny that sometimes when we think that people, it's just sort of the, like the fucked up nature of the way our society values things, but when someone kind of drops off and you go, oh my God, what happened
Did they get kicked out of the business? It's like, you know, years ago, Dana Carvey said he just decided to take a break for a long time. He had had a surgery and he realized he wanted to be with his kids. And that was more important than, you know, doing comedy and doing movies and stuff. But to the outside world, like, oh my God, what happened? What did he do? And it's like, well, man, he wanted a better life with his kids. And I mean, that's like, what more could you, that's like man, the greatest reason ever to not pursue all this stuff, you know?
Yeah, I agree with that. That's something I've been struggling with lately with work, is when I have to go away. And yeah, I just don't like being away from my family, but I also don't, the idea of dragging them around with me, it seems absurd. You know, they're very happy here at home. And I think I miss them more than they miss me. But it was scary because when this whole thing started, I was out in LA trying to finish shooting a film. We got about 65% of the way through it. But every day it was like, should I go home? What am I doing? We're so close to being done, but it's getting worse, you know, and it was just very stressful. There were a couple of times that I flew home to visit my kids and then flew back to LA. And that was very stressful. I'd call my wife and be like, should I just stay here? Am I endangering you by coming home? You know?
Yeah.
But you know, knock on wood, that hasn't been the case. But yeah, it got increasingly difficult. The older they get, I mean, when they're babies, it's kind of like, yeah, I'll split. I can't be particularly helpful anyway. But when they grow up and they're interesting, then you want to like be around them. Yeah.
Yeah. But then what happens is when they're teenagers, they don't want you around. There's like a good window of maybe like 5 or 6 years where they're like, leave me alone.
Right. Right. So I want to capitalize before that happens. But, it's funny because now that I'm in a position where I literally just can't do what I do, and it hasn't even been that long. I mean, it's only been 3 weeks, but I do miss it. I miss what I was working on, and I'm worried, you know, I'm worried about the effect it'll have overall. I mean, online content and streaming and stuff, that's all fine and good, but I really love the theater, doing theater. And I'm wondering, like, how long is it going to be before people are even comfortable going in a theater or a movie theater again?
I wonder the exact same thing because of stand-up, because I had a bunch of stand-up dates that they've moved a couple times. And even as they started to move into August, I said to my manager, like, I can't envision that August people are going to want to like cluster in groups. Like it just doesn't, right. And I don't want to be irresponsible. And like, so maybe let's just push those off until, yeah, I don't know what the answer is. I mean, it will rebound. People do enjoy entertainment. They do crave live experiences. Eventually it will come back around, but you're right. The question is when, and because this is so unprecedented, no one, at least in our lifetimes, no one has any answers. Like it is the great for a species of creatures that loves certainty. We are having to choke down an enormous amount of uncertainty every day. And that's a really interesting thing.
Well, and we're all in the same boat. I mean, it's not very often where there's something where it's just the great equalizer. It can happen to anyone, anywhere. And, you know, we all have to be careful. And there's not many things like that. There's a lot of things that, I guess in one way, it's because there's so many things that separate us and there's so much divisiveness right now. It's kind of interesting to have something that makes us realize, really forces us to confront the fact that we are in a lot of ways very similar.
I mean, exactly the same. We are all exactly the same. And
yeah,
And that part of it, I think, is potentially, hopefully, something positive will come out of that.
Yeah.
That we kind of remember that we're all human and start to break down the walls of, you know, what I think social media has created, which is us and them. Well, really, us and really me and them, because I think it does sort of focus us on ourselves. And so, you know, hopefully this gets us out of that place. But I think there will be a lot of existential crises going on. I mean, even just to hear you say, like, oh, I really miss acting. It's interesting because I wonder how many people are sort of forced away from the momentum of their lives that go, gosh, I think I actually was hating everything I was doing. What do I do now?
Well, it's funny because my little brother has a job that he despises, but he's considered an essential worker because he works for a grocery distribution company. So he's loading semi beds to deliver groceries, which they have to keep doing. So he's not getting a break. But I think honestly, as much as he's as tired as he is of his job, I think it would be even harder if he was just sitting at his house. Well, first of all, financially, he simply couldn't afford it. I mean, he barely has any money when he has a job. If he didn't have that job, he'd be beyond broke. And I also think he would just kind of go nuts just sitting in the house all day. But yeah, there are some, it's interesting. Yeah. It's really going to expose. It's kind of like a turtle coming out of its shell, you know, and seeing, well, do I want to put this shell back on when this is all over, or do I want to put something else on?
You know? Yeah. Who are we? My wife said something last night when we were having dinner. She was like, cause we've actually been having a lot of fun, like just sort of spending time together. Cause you know, the melee of our days, we're both running around usually, and we kind of see each other at night. And now, you know, we're really getting to hang out. We have a puppy that has been taking up a lot of attention. But she said, I wonder if the divorce rate's going to go up after this. And I said, oh my God, absolutely. People who are sort of using their lives to distract the fact that they might be in a not great relationship, but don't want to take the time to deal with it, may be in a situation where they're forced to sort of deal with, you know, with their living situation now. And I think there are going to be such far reaching ramifications from all this that, you know, that I just, the mental health thing now is probably more important than most other times in recent memory of people just working out their stuff and trying to take care and take it easy. And, you know, cause I think it will be challenging in a lot of ways. Once it's not like when they go, okay, you can leave your houses now, everyone's going to go, great, let's all cram into a stadium and watch a football game. You know, like it's still going to be, there's going to be some hesitation and how do we deal with each other again? And if someone coughs in a restaurant, is everyone going to like run out of the restaurant and set it on fire? Like what's going to happen?
Right. Yeah. It's going to be hard not to, I think there's going to be a lot of PTSD, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's not as visceral as running around a battlefield, but they do keep referring to it as a war. So,
yeah, a war on the virus. Of course, there'll be some PTSD because it's a shot. I mean, anything that changes your lifestyle dramatically overnight, which is really kind of how it felt,
is
going to have an effect on people, a dramatic effect on people. And, you know,
well, particularly the EMTs and the healthcare workers. I mean, yeah, I was reading an article today about the EMTs, the experiences they're having. And, I mean, I don't know how they're not cracking up. I mean, it's super intense and, they have to be so, so careful. They say they're going up to people. They'll get a call. They'll go to the house, the door open, the person will be there. And the responder just holds a hand up and says, don't come any closer. Stay in the door. Stay where you are. What are your symptoms? Well, I got a fever. I'm coughing. Okay, I just want to tell you something. If we put you in this ambulance and we take you to the hospital, the odds are you're going to get a lot sicker. Do you really want to get in this ambulance right now?
Right.
No, I'll sweat it out here. All right, wow. See you later. Bye.
Wow.
You know, it's just crazy. And then but then they do see some people that like, no, this person has to go to the hospital. This person's about to die. Yeah. And then they put on these freaking hazmat suits and get the person in the ambulance, get them to the hospital, and then they go back. They spend an hour disinfecting the ambulance, like three different ways, ultraviolet light, bleach, Lysol, and then they have to disinfect themselves, disinfect the suits. You know, there's guys coming home from work. They take all their clothes off before they go in the house. There's a guy, he goes down to the side door of his house, takes all his clothes off except his underwear, puts it in a biohazard bag, puts it by the door, and goes straight into the shower. I mean, it's just, you know, so I would assume those people, yeah, they're going to have a couple of issues.
Well,
I mean, there's guys literally saying, I would rather get a fire. I would rather get a fire than a coronavirus call.
Oh my God. Yeah. I really do hope that there is a good mental health care system in place for those people, because they're right now, they're operating at that sort of, you know, peak, just move forward. They can't stop for a second to really process any of it, but they're still absorbing all this trauma and all this horrible shit. And yeah, Eventually they're going to have to process it. And so I do think that a lot of focus should be, when this starts to calm down, like, let's get these healthcare workers as much mental health help as we possibly can, because they are going to need it, you know, whether or not they realize it, because the momentum shock, there's just no way that a lot of them are able to even stop and process, because they just have to go, you know, deal with this every day.
Yeah. And they don't get much sleep.
No,
they don't get much of a break. It's kind of constant. But,
is anyone in your family a doctor? Your family's pretty academic.
Well, my father was a PhD, but he was in finance, accounting, business type stuff. My family, you know, my grandfather, my father's father, studied bugs. He studied malaria down in South America. And he caught, which fever was it? One of them fevers. I think it was a yellow fever. But anyway, he died. He died studying the migration of malaria from Africa to South America. And so that's in my lineage.
And now let's take a quick pause and thank this sponsor for this episode of the ID10T podcast, BetterHelp. That's help, H-E-L-P, help, as in help with maintaining your mental health, particularly now in a time where people are feeling isolated. Maybe they're forgetting to focus on their mental health because they feel overwhelmed by everything, but it is incredibly important. It's important even when we're not in the middle of a pandemic, but especially now. What is interfering with your happiness? What is sort of eating away at you? What do you need help with mentally? BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can start communicating in under 24 hours. Now, it's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's a professional counseling system done securely online. There's a broad range of expertise available, which may not be local in your area. The service is available worldwide. You can log into your account anytime, send a message to your counselor. You're going to get a timely and thoughtful response. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, so you never have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room, even when that does become an option again. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, and they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. So, go to their website, all right? You can read their testimonials if you want, betterhelp.com/reviews. And then when you're ready, go to betterhelp.com/Hardwick, my last name, betterhelp.com/Hardwick. Join the over 800,000 people taking charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. And by the way, ID10T podcast listeners get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/Hardwick. Again, that's help, H-E-L-P. And now, we glide gently back in to the ID10T podcast, already in progress.
Are you having a healthy relationship with the news cycle, or do you obsess about it, or do you kind of watch it a little bit and then turn it off?
Like I said, I hear it on the radio, but I don't watch any news. I mean, there's a TV in the house, but I don't hardly ever look at it. It's usually the kids are looking at it. But I don't watch any of the news. But I read, when I get up in the morning, I read some on my iPad here. But yeah. I try to do other things. I'm doing a lot of cleaning. Like I said earlier, I feel like kind of a custodian. I've turned into a custodian. I go for a walk every day because I have to move around a bit. Because I'm used to doing a lot. And it's like I said, I'm in a pretty spread out part of Brooklyn, so it's not like people aren't on top of each other. You can keep your distance. It's all right.
Yeah, we're sort of in the same situation with the dog, where we're in a neighborhood where it's easy to have distance, where we sort of walk around because the neighborhood we live in, there actually aren't sidewalks. It's just all like kind of windy roads. So there's not a lot of traffic right now. So we're able to sort of like walk the dog a few times a day. If someone passes by, one of us will cross the street. Now we've got these, you know, like masks on, where they're like, wear masks. No, they don't help. Well, wear them anyway. It'll probably, and we're like, you know what? We'll just fucking wear them. Is it really going to impact our, you know, like it's not a big deal to just wear them just to hedge all of our bets. And so, you know, that's been fine, but I'm curious if this is going to spark some different kinds of creativity. Are you writing more music, or are you writing a play, or is there any, have you felt any inspiration?
Yeah, that's interesting. I keep saying myself, the little taskmaster in my mind is like, yes, you need to, you know, you could be taking advantage of this time and doing this, that, or the other thing, but I find it very difficult to concentrate. I'll sit down even just to like read a book or something and get into something. And then, you know, one of the kids, your wife comes up and is like, oh, honey, can you help me with this? Or daddy, can we do that? And then I put the book down, and then like 2 days go by, and I'm like, oh, there's that book I was trying to read 2 days ago. And it's just like, it's kind of like, it's hard to focus. So I find I wind up doing lots of little things. And my mind is kind of like hopping around like a from here, there, and everywhere, you know. And then at night, like late at night when I'm just by myself, I'm usually pretty tired. I've been doing something weird. I've been watching a lot of concerts on YouTube. That's how I like old concerts. That's kind of how I end my day, is just sitting and watching. The first week and a half, it was like old Pavement concerts I was watching. Cool. Like really old. Like from when they like started out. And then I've switched to REM. I'm watching like some of the early REM concerts. And I keep asking myself, why am I doing that? It's something I think to do with like, well, first of all, it's performance, which I miss. Seeing people perform. And it's like youthfulness, energy, rebellion, you know, all these things that are in short supply the rest of the day. At the end of the day, I kind of, because that's really kind of one of the most fun things you can do is go to a concert. And who knows when that's going to, like we were saying earlier, who knows when that's going to happen again. I had tickets for the Rage Against the Machine tour this summer. Did you know this? They're going back on tour, Rage Against
the Machine? Yeah. I know Morello's been touring separately. He was touring separately for a while with a bunch of other people. And then they were going to go back and start touring again. And they will. I mean, they will go back. And now, listen, there's a lot more to rage at. So, you know, by the time they come out, there might, you know, Like
they're my little brother's favorite band of all time. Like he was obsessed with them, and when they broke up or went on leave, hiatus, whatever, he was so sad. And so I got him the ticket, like me and him a ticket for Madison Square Garden. And yeah, he was pretty happy about that. I like to do little things like that for him because, like I said, he doesn't have the most jovial life. Yeah, there will be a lot. There could potentially be a lot to rage about if they start trying to mess with these elections, you know, or say, I mean, that's the thing that I'm literally like is giving me ulcers is the notion that that they might mess with this upcoming election.
Well,
somehow.
Yeah, I mean, that's that, you know, with stuff like that, the only thing that I think you could ever say to yourself is like, well, as of today, they're not messing with it. So I think that's the best, you know, like it. This is really testing the limits of catastrophizing. I mean, there are so many different paths now to ultimately catastrophize, you know, in entertainment and political and infrastructure and like, what are restaurants and businesses going to look like and concerts, you know? And so I think really the best thing to do is be like, well, as of today, we're here. You know, the elections are still on as far as we know. And that's the best we can do. Cause you fucking would drive yourself crazy if you worried about everything that could collapse by the time this is over. It's just not, right. It's just dangerous. They're just dangerous roads to go down that we just don't know.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, you just have to have faith that the people there are people that are trying to fix it, to solve it, to make sure that it goes about the right way. And they're working really hard at that. So yeah, day at a time. I keep hearing that, you know, day at a time. And it really is true. I mean, if you told me 3 weeks ago that I was going to spend the next 3 weeks in my home, I would have had a panic attack or something. But you know, it really proves the old adage that you can get used to anything. I mean, people are very adaptable.
We do forget that, by the way, because we do try to build these little protection bubbles for ourselves, again, where we feel like everything's certain, everything's secure. We, you know, we can predict everything. We like predictability with a small amount of unpredictability to keep it exciting. But now I think some people are starting to hopefully remember like, yes, we are adaptable and we do, you know, human beings are ultimately, you know, like we are still here because we've figured out how to survive through the dark ages and through, you know, like the Black Plague and through the Spanish flu, you know, it's like humans, that is our one thing that we have is that we are adaptable and we do ultimately figure it out. We do have instinct, even though we try to be all intellect, we can be a little more instinctive sometimes.
But we don't want to change. We don't want to change unless provoked, you know. I mean, that's the interesting thing about the virus is it's saying, I hate to use the word, well, it's not the right word. But it's basically just insisting. It's insisting on it, saying, you know, you can have your opinion. You can say, well, I really like things the way they are, but you're gonna have to deal with this one way or another. You know,
it
would be nice if we could realize that change was important without having this, you know, deadly virus to deal with.
Yeah, but if we can, you know, at least if we can, again, take a horrible situation and try to do something positive with it, if it affects positive change, at least we could do something with a bad situation, you know. But then how that looks is just like no one knows. I mean, like every day it, you know, I'll check in with people. How you doing? I'm good today. Okay, that's the best we got. That's all we know for now. So let's chalk that up as a win. And you know, and that's, beyond that, I don't really know what else to do other than be a socially responsible citizen and stay at home and, not go out, not, you know, stay away from people and just, right. You know, like that's the best we can do. It's just that meme of the lazy guy on the couch, and it's, you know, like 2019, you know, lazy motherfucker, and it's the same picture, 2020, responsible adult, you know.
That's funny.
So it's just sort of, it's just sort of where it's at. But I wonder if this is going to affect, like, do you think maybe that, I asked you this a few years ago and I don't actually remember what you said, but it's, are you going to pursue more comedy stuff at any point? Cause you're super funny on the show and you were super funny, you know, it. And I just thought, oh, that guy, like, I wonder if he's going to start like dropping in comedies here and there more often.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I kind of wonder what the comedy is nowadays. Like I feel like there was a period where, that was a more well-defined genre, you know, particularly you were talking about Dana Carvey or a lot of the SNL folks kind of, you know, what Adam Sandler was doing, what Will Ferrell was doing. But that genre seems to have kind of receded a little bit. Like you don't see that, those chains, those franchises of films as much. It's kind of all turned into like superhero movies or something. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like there's, like there used to be, that used to be more of a thing.
Yeah, totally. It was definitely a certain genre of comedy. And then now not only are superheroes a thing, but they've melded comedy on top of superhero movies.
Yeah.
Because it's just so hard to, there are certain types of movies that people will put on pants and leave their homes for, and other types of movies where people are like, I could watch this on Netflix, you know, which is probably why like Sandler gets these massive deals at Netflix to make those types of movies, but just for Netflix.
So right.
Because
right.
People sort of feel like, oh, I don't need to leave. There isn't a reason that I need to see that on a giant screen. Whereas like spectacle movies with a lot of special effects, they go, okay, I do want to see that on a big screen, but do I need to see a guy like doing a silly character for 90 minutes on a big screen? Maybe I can stay home.
Yeah. Oh, so those movies, they're just not getting the theatrical.
But aren't as many of them. There are not as many of them. It was definitely a genre for a while where you would take like
Chris Farley or, you know, all these guys, they would make like, you know, 5, 6, 7, 10 movies and with these funny characters and I don't see it as much anymore. I mean, the last time I participated in something like that was this movie The Night Before with Seth Rogen and Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Anthony Mackie, but even that wasn't like because none of those guys, maybe Seth Rogen a little bit, but none of those guys are really what you would consider like an Adam Sandler or Will Ferrell type guy, you know, like SNL comedian comedy guy. They're just actors, but they made this kind of funny movie about Christmas and weed. Yeah.
Well, Seth and Evan always are the ones now that do seem to push the boundaries of that. I mean, they had that like grocery store where all the produce and everything were characters. It was like a CG movie where they were all like, where all the vegetables were like fucking each other and stuff. I'm trying to remember the name of it.
Was that Sausage Party?
Sausage Party. Nice.
Yeah.
Good pull.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't even see it, by the way. My wife is always saying your mind is filled with trivia, and it's true. I know the names of movies I haven't even seen. I don't know why that is. But
Celebrity Jeopardy. You need to be on Celebrity Jeopardy.
Oh, how's he doing, Mr. Trebek?
I don't know. I mean, he's hanging in there. I haven't seen an update on him in quite a while, but I am. I am concerned. I mean, you know, to have pancreatic cancer at a time where your immune system just can't be compromised. And, you know,
yeah.
I don't know. I hope he's okay. He's just such a sweet man and such an inspiration and just a good dude. It really is heartbreaking, but I haven't heard anything about him.
I'm assuming they're not shooting the show right now.
No, I can't imagine they would be. I just can't imagine there'd be any healthy way to
do it.
Yeah. Yeah, even if
because that seemed to be bringing him a lot of joy, as sick as he was. I just wonder now that if he doesn't have that to do, what's motivating him to fight?
I don't know. I really hope he's okay. I think he's going to be one of those guys like Mr. Rogers that people will always, you know, for generations to come, look back and go, that guy was a pillar. He was a rock in our society, and we were lucky to have him. You know, he's because the Jeopardy numbers, before everything got crazy, it was like, I want to say like 14 million people a night were watching Jeopardy, which is fucking crazy. Like,
yeah.
Those are not normal TV numbers anymore. So, right.
I think that might even be more than Trump's coronavirus briefings.
It might have been more than the briefings. It might have been a little more than
maybe. I don't know.
So what's on the docket for the rest of the day? What's going to fill the rest of your day?
My younger daughter has hidden. We went out yesterday and we hit a painted rock in the neighborhood, and her little friend from kindergarten. I have to deliver a map because her friend Emmett and his dad. They go out for little walks in the neighborhood. And so I'm going to deliver them the map and see if they can find the painted rock where we've hidden it.
Just as a suggestion, just to scratch the creative acting itch, dress up as a pirate and really commit to a character. Here be the map to the painted rock, yeasty. Just something fun to sort of give you that satisfaction of embodying another character while keeping your kids engaged.
Exactly. Yeah, it's funny. It's funny you say that because I do like the pirate voice. I might be making a pirate voice soon on the internet.
Oh, fantastic. Where will people find this?
It's supposed to be out Monday night, which is going, I don't know when you're even releasing this, but Jesus.
I'll tell you when this is
going should be
out.
Promoting it. It's some sort of fake festival. It's something to raise money for people that are down and out because of this whole virus thing.
This is going up April 14th, so it's a few days before The Quarry comes out.
I got it. Well, what's Monday? What is this Monday?
The coming Monday is April 6th.
Okay. Well, I don't know. Do you know an actor named Mitch Rouse? Have you ever heard of his name? He was on Strangers with Candy.
Oh, right. Okay.
And he was on Reno 911, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's putting this together. I don't even know what it's called, but apparently it's going to start streaming Monday night. And it's under the pretext of some sort of festival, but it's like a fake festival. And there'll be lots of little funny videos on there. And you donate some money in order to watch the skits or whatever. So that's unfortunately, that's like, I know that's super vague and unhelpful, but that's all.
By the time this comes out, it'll be out and people can find it. So that now that you've name checked him and people know that they might see an iteration of you as a pirate, I feel like if they haven't seen it yet, they will see it. They might actually stop this podcast, go watch that.
Yeah, it's so funny how the world works. But yeah, see, here she is. Show him the map.
Oh my gosh.
Waiting for me to deliver this map all day long.
That is
now. Is it dark enough?
Yeah, I can see it.
Oh yeah, there's the map.
Oh, that's fantastic! So, and there's all the homes.
Yeah, Emmett has to try and find this rock with his dad.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Is there an X on the treasure rock?
Is there an X where the rock is? Yeah, oh, it's a kind of like a red
Oh, I see it.
Sun. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. So that's my mission, should I choose to accept it.
I feel like you've accepted it, and I don't want to keep you from that because there is a painted rock that needs to be found.
Fair enough.
But I really hope I hope you hang in there. I hope you're doing okay. I had so much fun a couple of years ago when we got to do those couple of things together at midnight and then the podcast and everything. I was really looking forward to this again. I appreciate it. I can't thank you enough. Would you feel taken advantage of if I asked you to end the podcast with something piratey?
Oh, man. All right. Something piratey. Jesus.
You could tell people to stay home, stay safe, stay, you know, don't be.
Now listen here, buckaroos. I want you all to be staying in your homes. You see, you're lucky you have a home to begin with. Me, I'm out on the rough seas 7 days out of the week. So please be careful and wash your hands, matey. And don't get the scurvy.
A pirate service message.
Yes.
I wonder if any pirate has ever said, wash ye hands.
Oh, yeah, right? Probably not. Yeah.
All right. Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Stay healthy and safe. I really, I wish you all the best, and hopefully we'll catch up again soon.
All right, Chris. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.